Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, we have, once again, as our guest, historian, writer, speaker, and activist extraordinaire, Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. Welcome to ADV, Mark.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be on again.
There are quite a number of things I'd like to discuss with you, Mark. Your recent speech in New York, your interviews with news services, your upcoming protest against the Jewish supremacists at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. But first, let's get your perspective on the recent developments in the case of Ernst Zundel, the German-American artist and writer who has been subjected to a decades-long persecution because of his views on German history, Jewish power, and the history of World War II. I understand that after 2 years of incarceration on phony pretexts, Mr. Zundel has finally been charged in Germany.
Well, that's right. He was held for 2 years under solitary confinement conditions in Canada as a so-called threat to national security, a pretext as even the leading daily newspaper in Canada acknowledged. He was, after being found a threat to national security, was deported to Germany on the 1st of March, and he's been held ever since in what's called investigative custody. That's a common thing in Germany and on the continent, in place of bail. Bail isn't quite as common in Europe as it is here. One good thing is that the conditions under which he has been held in Germany in Mannheim prison are much better than they were in Canada. And we've gone into some of the draconian and harsh circumstances under which he was held in Canada on this show. But in Germany, his conditions have been better. A few days ago, and this has been reported fairly widely, he was finally formally charged, and I spent part of today trying to find out details about the specifics of the charges. I was told that only that he has been charged under the notorious paragraph 130 of the German Criminal Code, which makes it a crime to deny the Holocaust as a so-called form of popular incitement. That's the term Volksverhetzung that's used in this section of the German Criminal Code.
Well, what does that mean, popular incitement? Does that mean to get people excited about the fact that perhaps some of the Holocaust stories are not true?
It's considered incitement to even say truthful things about the Holocaust or the Holocaust story that go against the official version.
I see.
It cannot be emphasized strongly enough that this is a blatant, a grotesque violation of the principle of free speech that the Western world, the United States, and even Germany claim to uphold. It's the only chapter of official history that to deny is considered a crime. And Ernst Zundel is an outspoken international figure in this battle because of the tremendous legal fight that he engaged in Canada during the 1980s in two very widely publicized trials. And actually, he's been in the last several years before he was picked up 2.5 years ago in Tennessee. He was living pretty quietly in the United States and had given up his operations in Canada. But against his intentions, he's once again been thrust into the international spotlight.
I understand there are 14 charges that have been laid against him. Is that correct?
That's right. I've heard there are 14 counts, but I'm unsure of what the specifics. Now, in the preliminary, you might say, indictment under which he was held before he was formally charged, the most ominous of these counts is that he denied the Holocaust on the Zundel site website, which is actually run by his wife.
Yes.
The ominous and dangerous aspect of this that is really very striking is that he's being charged for an expression of opinion that's legal in the country where it's being expressed, that is in the United States. Now, the Zundel site, and I urge those listening to this interview to consult it, and you can find it by checking out zindelsite.org or going to the IHR site, ihr.org, and going to the links page, we'll see what's there. Now, this is an American website. It's maintained by his wife, not by Aaron Zindel himself. Now, the Canadian and German courts have contested that, and they claim that he runs it, but I know for a fact that it's not true. In fact, one of the strongest indications that this claim is not true is that for 2 years, Aaron Zindel's been unable to operate any kind of website. It's actually operated by his wife, but it's an American website.
Well, they can't charge her. They would charge her if they could, if she's committing this quote-unquote crime, but they can't charge her because she's an American citizen, correct?
No, it's not. Not because she's an American citizen. That's yet another aspect of this that's very worrisome. If she went to Germany, she could be charged.
I see.
Holocaust denial is a crime in Germany, whether the person is a German citizen or not. Hans Schmidt was incarcerated for a time in Germany, even though he's a naturalized U.S. citizen.
So if I deny the Holocaust through some statement I make today, for example, here in the United States, if I go to Germany, I could be subject to prosecution under those same laws then?
Well, that hasn't yet been applied as that extensively, but even if you were a German national here in the United States making a statement that's legal under American law, the implications of what Germany is doing is that that person could be held accountable. Now, this would create international chaos. Imagine, for example, if a Chinese citizen were to denounce the Communist Party of China on an American website, and then the Chinese government were to ask that he be extradited to China to be punished for those expressions of views.
I would imagine that Chinese nationals have done precisely that.
I imagine that has happened, right, exactly. But the only person to have been treated in this particularly grotesque way so far has been Aaron Zindel.
The Canadian Jewish Congress, in the person of Len Rudner, said that he was very pleased that the German prosecutors have charged Aaron Zindel, and they were calling for what they called a successful prosecution in order to, quote-unquote, completely discredit Aaron Zindel.
Right. It's a point that I've made over and over, and I think it's an obvious one, that Aaron Zindel wouldn't have been extradited. He wouldn't be in the situation he's in, except that Canadian and American and world Jewish organizations have been working vehemently for years to shut Zindel up forever and to lock him up. And as I think I've mentioned, I was very, very conscious of this when I testified before a so-called human rights tribunal in Toronto on behalf of Aaron Zindel, and was just very struck by the fact that here I was testifying. Paul Fromm was there on behalf of Aaron Zindel as well in the matter. But on the other side were a small army of lawyers representing all of the major Jewish organizations of Canada there to try to punish and shut up Aaron Zindel. Amazingly, they were trying to punish him for what appeared on the Zindel site, even and foremost, writings that are legal in Canada in printed form. That
Indeed.
Makes the case even more grotesque. But these organizations are not at all interested in any kind of fairness in this matter. It's obvious that the motive is one of just intense revenge and hatred of someone like Aaron Zindel, who has had the courage and the gall to speak up against their power over the years.
Ironically, it seems that they have given his work far more publicity than it would otherwise have had.
That's true, but unfortunately, so many people are so afraid that the fact that Aaron Zindel is in jail is a very intimidating thing, and rightly and understandably so for most people. They don't want to be put in jail and punished in that sort of way, which really underscores once again what an extraordinary man Aaron Zindel is.
Yes, very few of us would have the courage to go through what Aaron Zindel has gone through and remain defiant.
Right. Both defiant and, in spite of everything, remarkably upbeat and philosophical about his situation. And this comes through for anyone who knows him well, but also in the letters that he's written during the time that he was being held in Canada and the letters he's written since he's been in Germany. He sees himself as having been thrust onto this stage almost by destiny, in spite of his efforts to just live a quiet life in the United States with his wife, Ingrid, who, as you've mentioned, is a naturalized American citizen.
Have you been in contact with Mrs. Zundel? How's she taking the news?
Well, it's very hard. I was in touch with her today, and I've been in touch with her. I'm in touch with her really pretty regularly. She's afraid she'll never have her husband back, and she may never see him again, because even if he's released from Germany, he's not permitted now to come back to the United States. And she's in the situation where she faces arrest herself if she goes to Germany. So it's a very bad thing. And she's been forced to be responsible for this tremendous legal campaign, in addition to all the other work she was doing before her husband was arrested. And this is a tremendous responsibility and burden, an emotional struggle for anyone in a situation like this. And it's really remarkable how much what a great job she's done carrying this on over the last several years.
Did you find out when we can expect a trial? When will this nightmare be on its way to being over for the Zundels?
She told me that she does not expect a trial before November at the earliest, so it'll be probably sometime after that. And I'm trying right now to get a copy from his attorney of the actual indictment brief or formal charges brief against him, again, to see all of that. But we want to do as much as we can to encourage publicity for this case in Germany itself and in Europe, because Ernst Zundel is the most prominent political prisoner in the Western world today, and his case should be given maximum publicity. It's really to the shame of groups like Amnesty International and so forth that they have kept hands off this whole case in spite of the just crying injustice of the treatment he's had to endure.
How can our listeners who may be interested in helping give financially to support the legal campaign for Ernst Zundel?
They can send donations to his wife, Ingrid Rimland, and the address is given on the Zundel website, which I mentioned earlier. And for those who have any trouble, they can, of course, go to the IHR website. And the Zundel site is linked on the IHR website links page. And that's the best way to support. One ominous aspect of this, Ingrid told me, is that now he's restricted to receiving and sending no more than two letters a day.
Mm.
Some days in recent months, he's been receiving as many as 60 letters a day. But that apparently is being very, very sharply curtailed now. And, of course, Ernst has been writing a lot from his prison cell in Germany.
What is done with the other 58 letters that he can't see?
I don't know, but it does sort of indicate that letters sent to him now may either not reach him at all or not for some, not without a tremendous delay, or maybe just sent back. But anyway, all this is very, very sad, really. But that's the situation right now.
Mark, I see from the IHR website that you have some major activism planned for next week, a protest in front of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles. With so many institutions of Jewish supremacism in this country and in this world, why are you protesting against the Wiesenthal Center in particular?
Well, one obvious reason is that its international headquarters is located nearby. It's in Los Angeles. But the other reason, another big reason, is that the Wiesenthal Center is just as culpable, just as dangerous as groups like the Anti-Defamation League or AIPAC in promoting Jewish Zionist interests against the interests of the United States and other countries. But the Wiesenthal Center has not been targeted, at least not until now, in the same way, because they emphasize a lot the Holocaust. And that gives a kind of protection or a kind of shield for the Wiesenthal Center, because they say, well, to attack us is to attack the memory of the dead. It's not a, and so, but the Wiesenthal Center is every bit as involved in the larger Jewish Zionist agenda as groups like the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and AIPAC. And it's high time that the Wiesenthal Center be targeted.
Can you give us an overview of the Wiesenthal Center? Who's behind it? How was it started? And what is its agenda?
Well, it was founded back in the 1970s. And the head of it is a man named Rabbi Marvin Heyer, who calls himself the dean. He really has no real educational or any other credentials except a self-appointed one. He's a rabbi, but that's it. But the Wiesenthal Center is immensely influential. It claims to have a membership of more than 300,000 and an annual income of, according to its last filing, of $27 million. But the one of the most outrageous features is that the Wiesenthal Center receives $10 million a year in taxpayer funds. And over the years, it's received at least $10 million in California taxpayer funds as grants, as just outright money for nothing. Now, much of this taxpayer money that's given to the Wiesenthal Center is given in return for so-called tolerance courses that it gives to police agencies and so forth, which is just an indirect way of pushing the agenda of the Wiesenthal Center and other Jewish Zionist organizations.
It sounds like they have some friends in high places.
Well, the Los Angeles Times Magazine had this to say about Heyer. It says that Heyer has accrued unprecedented clout in the legislature, on Capitol Hill, in the city's boardrooms, and even in Hollywood. Apropos of that, Heyer is the only rabbi to have received a Academy Award for a motion picture. It's for a documentary that the Wiesenthal Center put out. And they've been able to get support from, well, current governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, former President Ronald Reagan, many former U.S. presidents, governors of various states, senators, and so forth, have lent their names in support to the Wiesenthal Center.
Now, they pose as a pro-tolerance humanitarian organization, but there's a little bit more to it than that, isn't there, Mark?
There's a lot more to it. The real agenda of the Wiesenthal Center is a very narrow Jewish Zionist one, and anyone who takes a look at its website or takes a look at its magazine can easily see that most of its effort is spent in pushing Israeli interests and Jewish interests.
They support the what is called the apartheid wall, or the quote-unquote security fence, do they not?
Right. I'm sure many listeners to this interview are familiar with it, but for those who aren't, this is a really grotesque thing. This is a huge barrier that's been built on occupied Palestinian land that in many places is three times higher than the Berlin Wall. It's been found to be illegal by the International Court of Justice. It's been condemned by the United Nations. But the Wiesenthal Center has fervently defended it in spite of its both illegal and its grotesque character.
I understand that there are some Jewish authors and Jewish advocacy groups that themselves question the ethics and agenda of the Wiesenthal Center. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. The Wiesenthal Center, as I mentioned, came into being in the 1970s, and there's a lot of competition for money by all of these various Jewish groups. And the biggest competitor of the Wiesenthal Center for bucks is the Anti-Defamation League, and they're unhappy with the clearly reckless way that the Wiesenthal Center goes about collecting money. a few years ago, the Anti-Defamation League acknowledged in an internal memorandum that was made public and reported on in the Los Angeles Times, makes inaccurate and exaggerated claims about anti-Semitism to raise money. An ADL official cited a Wiesenthal Center fundraising letter that is, as he put it, replete with factual misstatements and exaggerations about anti-Jewish sentiment in the United States and Europe. Now, that's a polite way of saying that the Wiesenthal Center just wildly exaggerates the so-called danger to Jews. If you read any given copy of its magazine Response, which is this glossy, sensationalist thing, you get the impression that brown-shirted stormtroopers are about to take over all over the world. There's this tremendous theme in the Wiesenthal Center periodicals that neo-Nazis and dangerous people everywhere are just about to push Jews into gas ovens. And it plays on fear, really.
So it's even too much for the ADL.
It's even too much for the ADL. In fact, it's so bad that at one point the Wiesenthal Center put out a report on Switzerland during World War II that was so exaggerated that even Simon Wiesenthal distanced himself from it. It claimed that during World War II the Swiss had locked up Jews in concentration camps and mistreated them and so forth. Completely untrue. And this was part of the big shakedown campaign that many listeners might remember, to squeeze billions of dollars from Switzerland and from Swiss corporations and banks for Israel and for Jewish organizations back then.
Which was successful, I might add.
Oh, yeah, which was very successful. It's really grotesque. And that campaign, in which the World Jewish Congress played the biggest role, is still not forgotten by a lot of people in Europe who are very resentful about the heavy-handed and really just grotesque way that Switzerland was targeted and blackmailed in this way.
I understand that the Wiesenthal Center also has its hands in the education of ordinary school children, pushing their view of history and their very Jewish-focused agenda on the minds of very vulnerable young people.
Right. Every day, large school buses, every school day, busloads of school children are brought into the Wiesenthal Center. One of the reasons that I decided to organize this campaign is that a school teacher in San Diego, whose children were going to a Catholic private school, was unhappy that his children were going to be bused up to the Wiesenthal Center. Now, he didn't know or understand as much as many people do about the overall agenda of the Wiesenthal Center, but he was particularly unhappy that the Rabbi Heyer and the center have denounced Pius XII, the Pope during the Second World War, and other Catholic and other Christian leaders during World War II, and he didn't want that happening. And I've been struck by just how many people, no matter what their starting point might be about this thing, are offended at the way the Wiesenthal Center handles this. Anyway, he organized a campaign in his own school to get parents to not go along with this. But the Wiesenthal Center does this, and it's treated as almost as a branch of the California government.
They have a close relationship with Arnold Schwarzenegger, do they not?
Well, right. Many people say that Arnold Schwarzenegger paid $1 million or $500,000 to the Wiesenthal Center and was given a kind of clean bill of health from the center because Arnold Schwarzenegger's father had been a member of the National Socialist Party in Austria during World War II.
Yes.
So this is a sort of way to get him off the hook for being criticized that way. But the Wiesenthal Center runs through these school children, and several years ago the state legislature gave a $5 million grant to the Wiesenthal Center and tried to justify this grant by saying, well, it gets all these school children there. Well, one school teacher said that, thousands of school kids might go to McDonald's every day too, but the state doesn't pick up the tab for their lunches. it's really outrageous that at a time when school teachers all up and down the state are asking parents to supply pencils and paper for schools, and there's a real shortage in the state budget for educational expenses and for highways and so forth, that the Wiesenthal Center has been given these millions of dollars. Another example of that is the man who's now the mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa, boasted about his role in getting, he said, $18 million to the Wiesenthal Center when he was in the state legislature.
Unbelievable.
The Wiesenthal Center is so powerful and so influential in the state that every politician effectively has to go and make his peace and be given approval by the Wiesenthal Center to have an effective role in California politics.
If they didn't do that, what would happen, Mark?
Well, they'd be all sorts of forces would be mobilized against them. Because what happens, not just with the Wiesenthal Center, but in Washington as well, is that AIPAC or the ADL and the Wiesenthal Center insist that politicians declare themselves on the issues that are of big concern to American Jews. And if they don't come up with the answers that these organizations want, then Jewish groups will punish them by supporting their opponents or, at the very minimum, making sure that money dries up for their own campaigns. Remember, it's a remarkable fact that something like half of the money, this is from Jewish analysts of the American political scene, something like half the money that goes to the Democratic Party presidential campaign comes from Jewish sources, and about a quarter of the money for the Republican Party.
That's from 2.5% of the U.S. population.
That's from 2.5% of the U.S. population. It means that Jews have more political clout and power than any other single ethnic or religious group in American life. And that effectively means a tight grip on political life in this country. And the Wiesenthal Center plays a very, very important role in that corruption of our political system.
What is the date of your demonstration, Mark?
It's on Friday, July 29th at noon. And we're going to be demonstrating at the offices of the Wiesenthal Center. We also encourage people to contact us beforehand, and they can contact us through the IHR website at ihr.org. They can write to us at ihr@ihr.org. We're looking forward to a good demonstration that'll focus some attention, finally, in a really public way about this center's real record.
Be with us again next week as we continue our discussion with IHR Director Mark Weber. We'll be talking about even more of the outrages against freedom and free speech committed by the Wiesenthal Center and new efforts around the world to stop the Jewish supremacist agenda, its war of aggression in the Middle East, and the war of terror that has now come to us as a result. I also want to let you know that this coming September 11th, the birthday of National Vanguard founder William Pierce, will mark our largest ever organized literature distribution. National Vanguard Western States Coordinator Roger Williams has created two important new flyers focusing on homeland security and border control for this effort, and I'd like every American Dissident Voices listener to take part. To see the flyers and get a copy for duplication, just visit nationalvanguard.org/911. That's nationalvanguard, all one word, .org/911. Or write to National Vanguard, Box 5145, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22905.